Hi, everyone, and welcome to the White House. We have a special event today, special live chat to roll out some exciting news. And I'm here with Anish Chopra and Vivek Kundra. Anish is the CTO for the administration, and Vivek is the CIO. And we're trying something new here in terms of giving you guys the first crack at questions consistent with the administration's commitment to openness and transparency. We're letting you have the first go at it. So I'm going to hand it over to Anish to roll out some exciting news.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, Macon. And on behalf of Vivek and myself, real excited to be with you this morning. Today, the White House released a directive on open government. It's a directive that will focus on the president's key priorities of keeping America accessible and accountable for the capabilities that we, for the initiatives that we're describing. The president, on his very first full day in office, directed the Office of the Chief Technology Officer to work closely with the Office of Management and Budget and the General Services Administration to put together a set of policy priorities that will institutionalize what he has said from his very beginning in public service. He believes America is at its best when it is focused on a government that's more open, one that's more participatory, and one that's more collaborative. Those principles he outlined in a memorandum on that very first full day, and it is here embarked today in the form of a directive. The directive itself has three key themes that I'd like to highlight before I turn it to my colleague. The first theme, this is a directive that reflects the president's key priorities. He has asked us and has empowered us to put these initiatives into the hands of the executive branch. The second is that he has asked us to work together as a team. We've been working closely with the stakeholders across the agencies, the stakeholders across the American people, and as well with the and those in the state and local governments. Third, this is a capability that the president has described. That focuses on results. In short, let me make this very basic statement. The president has called for us to deliver on a set of measures and to describe those measures. Let me turn it over to my colleague, the Chief Information Officer.
Great. As Anish said, the directive is actually grounded in the president's commitment to a transparent, to an open, and collaborative government. The president committed early on to making sure that we were changing the default setting of the public sector from that of being secretive, opaque, and closed to one that is open, transparent, and participatory. And this is grounded in the principles that were outlined earlier on making sure that we're tapping into the ingenuity of the American people. Thousands of people across the country were involved in recommending how we can create a more transparent, open, and participatory government. Specifically, the directive instructs agencies in 45 days to make available high-value data sets, at a minimum, 3 high-value data sets. And we've seen what happens when high-value data sets are made public. Immediately after launching the data.gov, which was the same day as the Open Government Initiatives, what we saw was a number of applications that were created. One application that was created was flyontime.us. And on this application, what you can do is actually go online and see the average delay time of flights across the country and also average waiting times at airports. And this was powered by data that the government made public through the Federal Aviation Administration. Second, in 60 days, Anish and I will both launch a dashboard that will be hosted on whitehouse.gov that will hold agencies accountable for what is prescribed in this directive. And also, each agency will be launching an open government website. And on that website, we will engage the American people on how we can advance a more open government agenda and the status of each of those agencies in terms of how they're performing against what's in this directive. Within 90 days, agencies are going to receive guidance from OMB that Anish and I and a number of other stakeholders will work on that will challenge agencies to leverage prizes and challenges. And we've seen what happens when challenges are used to tap into the ingenuity of the American people, whether that's the Red Balloon Challenge from DARPA or the Sunlight Foundation and the challenge that it issued when data.gov was launched, or the SAVE Award, where we've already received over 38,000 ideas on how we can save money across the board. And within 120 days, each agency will create a plan, an open government plan, to ensure that we can hardwire a culture of accountability, transparency, and collaboration. And finally, we're going to be evaluating policies across the federal government to make sure that those policies enable us to engage American people and leverage technologies so we could unleash the creativity and the ingenuity of the American people rather than defaulting in a position historically where people believe that Washington may have had the best ideas. We recognize in this administration that the best ideas don't necessarily live within the four walls of Washington, that we need to be able to tap into the ingenuity of everybody around, and that's what this directive reflects, is a president's commitment and an open, collaborative, and transparent government.
Okay, so we're gonna take some questions. We are taking questions through the White House website. Many of you are probably watching it there, whitehouse.gov/alive. We've had a couple questions already. One's pretty obvious, where can I find the directive? Go to whitehouse.gov. OMB Director Peter Orszag just published it in a blog post. So many of you should just take a moment and download that, scan through it. But keep the questions coming. I know there's a lot of conversation happening on Twitter as well. And we'll just start firing away. So the first question came from Twitter, a guy named Bronze. We'll just go with that. Basically says, OpenGov seems to go hand in hand with correcting Patriot Act excess and abuse. Will the announcement address that?
Well, the directive right now is actually focused primarily on opening up government itself. And if you look at some of the highlights that we've talked about, whether that's within 120 days or 45 days, the focus primarily and within agencies, what's forthcoming is specific actions that are going to be taken within 100 days at an agency level.
I would just simply add this. When you look to the output of this open government directive, what this really says is that when we make decisions in Washington, we want to make sure that we are held accountable for the results that we are expected to deliver. We want to make sure that every American has a chance to weigh in on how those policies should be implemented. And we want to take full advantage of the capabilities of our modern world to collaborate in new ways in the execution of those policies, whether it be in healthcare reform or in educational reform, or even in areas that are more operational, which is how do we issue procurements within the federal government. In every aspect of what we do, what the president's called for is that we embed these principles. And now, for the first time with this directive, our agency leadership will be held accountable for their ability to incorporate these values in their work going forward.
Great. One follow-up question to what you said, Vivek. When you talk about high-value data sets, what does high-value mean?
Sure. So when data.gov was initially launched with the 47 data sets and now over 100,000 data sets, a big shift that needs to happen now is moving away from just the technology itself in terms of making geodata available to policy. If you think about the high-value data sets, whether that's around healthcare, education, or energy, is thinking about which data sets are going to fundamentally change the way government operates or move the government to an environment where making this data available publicly is going to improve the operations of government. So if you think about healthcare, for example, which high-value data sets can ensure that our healthcare system is more transparent and open? Which data sets, when we think about education, are going to enable an environment where we're making available information so people can see performance? That's what we mean when we talk about high-value data sets.
Yeah, and I'll make a comment on process. As we have been working these past months to realize this vision, We have met individually with cabinet secretaries to the highest level of leadership in Washington. And one of the first conversations that we have with those cabinet secretaries is, what policy objectives are you most committed to that you think the American people can help advance? So Secretary Vilsack earlier this year announced that he wants, as part of his commitment to address childhood obesity, to release information on the nutritional content of America's foods. You can see this at myfoodopedia.gov, and as of today, you can download that file of nutritional value for 1,000 most commonly eaten foods on data.gov. So it's having the conversation with each of our leaders to find out what are the big objectives that they wish to tackle on behalf of the president's agenda and in support of the American people, and how can the principles of open government, and in particular the data sets, allow others in the ecosystem to support and advance on those activities. We just can't afford to have a federal government solution for every issue. By relying on the ingenuity of the American people, we can advance these policy priorities in new and more creative ways.
Okay.
And just to add to that, Macon, one of the other things we are looking for is for people to give us feedback on what you believe are high-value data sets that should be out there in the public domain that may not be out there.
Okay. I've been reminded quite a few times I neglected to introduce myself. I'm Macon Phillips, and I work here at the White House with Anish and Vivek. And one other person who deserves to be mentioned here is Beth Novick. So I know one of the areas that she was working on quite a bit is what each of the agencies' open government plans will be required to include, which so takes us to this question from Joe Goldman. What will agency open government plans be required to include?
Well, I will allow Vivek to talk through the specific component parts to this, but first let me introduce Beth. Beth is the Deputy Chief Technology Officer and our lead in handling open government matters. She's an expert on this issue, having authored a book on the subject. But I would suggest the following. What is exciting about the directive is that it actually explicitly describes what we anticipate the agencies doing. But it does something more. We've actually created a climate where now cabinet secretaries are assigning very senior leaders in their immediate office who are accountable for this directive. So Vivek will describe what it has as a component, but I will give examples like Todd Park, the Chief Technology Officer at HHS, who's been working in the immediate office of Secretary Sebelius to think through these principles and how they can change the way our work is done at the Health and Human Services Secretariat.
And on the directive itself, which is on whitehouse.gov, there are very detailed requirements in the plan. So I'm not going to go through every single page that talks about the specific requirements. But at a high level, what this website would allow you to do is to actually see how are agencies complying with the requirements and instructions in the directive. What are they doing, for example, on data quality? One of the challenges we have across the federal government is poor data quality. So when you go to usaspending.gov, for example, we want to make sure that agencies across the board are putting out information and making sure that information is accurate, timely, and comprehensive. Those are some of the examples of requirements that will be posted online. And of course, the status on how agencies are performing against what's in this directive.
One brief comment on this, Macon, I think it's important for those who are participating in this to understand. Historically, there have been two theories of the case of how these directives and government management in general operate. One of those models is what we could easily refer to as command and control, that we are essentially directing what the agencies do and telling them how to do it. Another model is that we simply allow the agencies to pursue whatever they're doing at the grassroots level and maybe perhaps an attaboy. This president is committed to a new model, a model of focused collaboration, and that is what you're seeing in this directive. In other words, we're not telling the agencies exactly what data to publish. We're enabling them to answer that question to best address the concerns that they have, and in fact have called on those agencies in developing those plans to consult with the American people in their own context. So focused collaboration means that we're setting a policy framework, that we are going to be holding people accountable, and that we encourage a process whereby those agencies engage the American people, their stakeholders, and come up with what they believe the high priority areas are to focus, and that we execute. This is the management philosophy that underlies the directive that you've seen launched.
Great. I think a fairly basic question that pops in a lot of folks' mind comes from Jerry Metchling, who says,
Professor.
Is that okay? He says, how do we handle worries about privacy and security?
Great question.
So central to this directive is making sure that in no way are we compromising national security and also privacy and confidentiality concerns. Some of the early learnings, of course, when it comes to data.gov has been the deliberations around data sets. So it may make sense, for example, to release an individual data set and say, hey, this data set should be out there, should be open. But when it's combined with other data, it could create an issue around privacy and confidentiality. And part of the challenge is, as we move forward in this digital era where more and more information is out there in the public domain, we have to be sensitive and we have to understand that we need to make sure we've got the proper protections for privacy, confidentiality, and national security, and that is part of the directive itself. But there are also technologies now that are available that were never available before that allow us to achieve both objectives.
Professor, this notion of privacy is one of the most important components of our broader technology agenda. We have an interagency working group focused on privacy issues in areas where there are particular highly sensitive concerns, healthcare. Our director for the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology has said, we will not succeed in the president's vision for a more digitized healthcare system if we don't thoughtfully address the concerns of patient privacy. That's why he's appointed a chief privacy officer within HHS. This is an important threshold, but it's not one that can't be overcome. We're very confident that if done right, these initiatives will be supportive and collaborative with one another.
Okay. Our next question, it comes from Fernando Diaz, who says, how will this be able to trickle down to cities and states?
We'll do this together. Yeah. This is too exciting. You're looking at two guys who come from that world. I had been Virginia's Secretary of Technology, and Vivek had been Chief Technology Officer in Washington, D.C. We believe the innovative spirit of our public sector in many ways is born out of the entrepreneurial activities at the state and local level. We highly encourage state and local governments to consider evaluations of similar directives. One of the things that we were so proud of when Vivek launched data.gov was how many state and local governments replicated the model. We see this as a key pillar of public sector work, not just within the Obama administration. I think one of the key points that Mr. Diaz presented here is that this is a foundational layer of how the American people wish to interact with its public sector. The purpose of this directive in many ways is so that this lasts well beyond in the decades to come, that this capability, it's not ascribed to one administration. It's a foundational layer, and we believe people of all stripes and all communities will celebrate this. So no, in fact, we think, we hope this will be a helpful tool in support of state and local entrepreneurial activities to promote open government.
And we've seen results in this administration working very closely with states and local governments, and for that matter, globally also. As Anish mentioned, when data.gov was launched, what we saw immediately was New York City followed up with a version, San Francisco followed up with a version, state of Massachusetts, and more importantly, other parts of the world, UK and so forth, were following up. And so there's this global movement, and it's a one-way street that the president had laid a mark when it comes to this culture of transparency, openness, and collaboration. And with data.gov, for example, this concept of operations that's out there in the public domain, a big part of it was formed with a collaboration and engagement across the board at the state and local level. Same thing with the IT dashboard. We're seeing that other cities and states want to leverage the same platform, and we're working with them to be able to engage in getting some of the software and the technologies so that this becomes a national movement. And Anish and I work very, very closely with the National Association of State CIOs and other stakeholders across state and local government to make sure that we can scale best practices both ways. But we're beneficiaries of the input that each of you are providing, and that's really, really fundamental to making sure that we continue to scale and improve what we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
One final comment. Vivek and I on Thursday are testifying at the Senate Budget Committee Working Group on Government Performance. When you see the case studies that we'll be presenting at Thursday, you'll see very clearly how state and local participants born on a platform of a federally supported platform can achieve dramatic results at lower costs and improved service value. So it's critical.
Okay. Our one question I think that might be a good clarification comes from Restrother, who says, odd that the OpenGov directive only covers quality of financial info, not quality of all government info. Can you sort of clarify what information the Open Government Directive covers?
It actually covers all information across the federal government, and that's why making sure that each agency, if you look at the directive, is instructed to ensure that they have a senior official responsible for data quality across the U.S. government.
I think the confusion might be that there are certain platforms that are referenced in the directive that we are standing up sort of foundational platforms. And those that have been launched and that are directly referenced here do speak to the financial aspects because of certain legislation that has actually allowed us to support those cross-cutting platforms. But the individual agencies bear that responsibility, as Vivek referenced. So to clarify, that is the distinction.
Okay. Our next question comes from Identity Woman, who brings up an interesting point. Reading the Open Government Directive right now, it calls for open formats. Seems like developing a standard for new kinds of data will be important.
Well, the point here is that we want that information to be as accessible from a friction standpoint, as least friction as possible in being able to consume that information and deliver greater value. And in part, that is making sure that information in a certain manner can be downloadable and then reusable. The notion of standards is an interesting one. We in Washington have been called for by the Congress to formalize a set of open data standards in key domains. We're in the midst of a regulatory process to lay the foundation for healthcare information technology, working collaboratively with the American people as we did an online health IT forum where we embraced these principles of open government to engage. What standards are most appropriate to ensure that you get a copy of your medical record? What are the standards in promoting energy efficiency so that you know what the meter will tell you about your usage patterns? What are the standards to make sure that you know what your child's performance is in school? All of those standards are called for in legislation for us to establish, and we intend very much so to embrace these, as we already have been, these principles of open government in the development of those standards. And it's a very, very thoughtful question. And in fact, if we get standards right, we believe this can be a big engine of economic growth for the country.
And if we ensure that all these standards are open, what it allows us to do is to make sure that we don't start locking in certain verticals in the broader economy, so that innovation can happen across the board. The earlier question about state and local government participation, imagine if all of a sudden you had data formats or data or information that wasn't compatible. Today already within the federal government, where we spend about $76 billion in information technology, one of the most difficult parts is actually getting systems to talk to each other. And part of it is because of how they've evolved through standards that are not compatible. And that's why open standards are very, very important.
Okay. This was a pretty good question here. I'm thinking, so basically the person's saying a lot of people watching this are way past the discussion. However, there's a this is also targeted at an audience that is new to the whole idea. I'm thinking about seniors, students, CEOs, et cetera. A big debate in Tennessee is this. Should government be run like a business, i.e. secrecy, competition, protecting trade secrets, or run like a democracy, openness, transparency, equal access, equal opportunity, based policy on common good and not special interests, et cetera, which I think gets to the point of, how does openness actually help government run better, not just sort of an accountability step, but in terms of actual run like a business better?
I got to tell you, this the question was framed as it's an either or, run like a business or run like a democracy. Our experience is the opposite. It is both. We can be effective and efficient and rigorous in the way we execute the operations of government, and you can do that better if you've got a commitment to openness and innovation. Earlier in the year, the president called on the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service. It was in June. And he said, I ask that in 90 days you fundamentally transform how you communicate with your applicants and to the American people writ large. No incremental increase in budget, no new law, just find a way to make it happen. A key pillar of the results of that endeavor were that we published average wait times in ways that were very, very accessible to that senior citizen who's been coming into this country as an immigrant because their child perhaps wanted to reunite them and is waiting on that application status. What has that done, Macon? That has allowed us to say that those who apply in New York have an average turnaround time in X months, those who apply in Chicago have it in Y months, and those that are in Dallas have it in Z months. And by making that information available in a public setting, it creates more accountability so that all of our field offices can achieve not only Secretary Napolitano's vision for a more effective and efficient USCIS, but the president's really fundamental belief that that information transparency would bring about that kind of operational improvement that you would expect out of perhaps a private sector organization that is really committed to achieving certain margin improvement goals.
And transparency is just not a word. We've seen results when it comes to the performance of government, and we've seen innovation happen as a result of it. So if you think about just in the IT investment area I talked about earlier, what General Shinseki and the CIO at the Department of Veterans Affairs did, they literally put out their data through the IT dashboard and a program management initiative within the Veterans Administration, which led to projects actually being stopped. 15 of the 45 projects that were halted were stopped, and 30 of them were turned around. And one of the worst violators was actually a project that was over 17 months behind schedule and 110% over budget. That's the power of transparency leading to action. Another example, as I mentioned, through data.gov platform, is actually getting other parties to develop applications and provide solutions on a day-to-day basis. Whether you're looking for a job and having an application that lets you know on a real-time basis the closest job to your address, or whether that's an application around obesity, as Anish mentioned, or whether it's actually opening up the people's house with the logs of everybody that visits the White House. Across the board, what we're seeing is even a performance outcome as a result of these actions.
I want to make one more observation, if I could, Megan, because I think it's important to understand that some of this work is not just about technology or the development or the use of technology. I want to give you an example just of this week of how we are trying to make this vision tangible to the American people. If you are today suffering because you've lost your job and you're looking for a new one, I challenge you to visit the local Workforce One Stop, one of the thousands of them in the network that we federally support, state administer, locally govern. When you visit that Workforce One Stop, ask yourself, what are the range of tools that are available to me that can help me find that new job? Today, there's a set of tools that are available, but there may be hundreds of other tools that may not be known to the individuals who staff your local one-stop, but they could be made available to you at no charge and help you find that perfect fit to get your family and loved ones back into a financial footing. Under Secretary Solis's leadership over at the Labor Department, we're in the midst of the Job Tools for Job Seekers Challenge. This doesn't require government money. This doesn't require a change in law. Secretary Solis just asked a very simple question. How many tools out there could help a family or a loved one find that job that's right for them. Bring those tools into a platform so that every one of our local workforce one-stops can judge which ones make the most sense to meet the needs of our community. This is what we mean by open government. This is a request. In the first 36 hours of her ask, hundreds of software companies posted their tools, small companies and big companies. And over the course of the coming weeks and months, every one of those involved in this ecosystem of workforce training and support will mine through all of this work to find the best fit for you in your community. That's the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish here, and why having a directive that formalizes and institutionalizes this philosophy will make that person in Tennessee's life just a little bit better.
Okay. I think there's two questions here that sort of sum up what many people are probably thinking. One is from Andre Vivas, who says, agencies have a limited budget and a mandate to use their funds for other tasks. Will there be extra funding to reach this goal? And the second one is from Jeffrey Smith, who says, what kind of enforcement will be in place for agencies to meet those benchmarks? So how are we going to actually make this stick?
Excellent questions.
So on the funding side, one of the biggest lessons learned on the example that Anish mentioned earlier around USCIS is that we've got assets across the government, and changing the default from secret, opaque, closed to transparent, open, participatory, a lot of that is around how you approach these problems. With USCIS, their approach was a five-year modernization effort that hadn't hardwired historically transparency, open government, and collaboration. Because of the president's call and commitment to this, they're able to do that within existing resources, and more importantly, they're able to create value in 90 days versus 5 years. That's really, really important to look at. And secondly, is as we're looking at, we're in the process of planning the budget right now, we're looking at across the board agencies and how they're spending their money. But what's really important here to understand from the administration perspective, the dashboard that we're gonna be deploying on whitehouse.gov is actually gonna be holding agencies accountable, and we welcome you and your input and help us monitor in the same way you've been extremely helpful on the IT dashboard when agencies and all of us here are not delivering on the results that we've promised.
Can I make a simple suggestion for those of you who actually are working in our federal agencies trying to figure out how you fit into this system? Ask yourself this question. What set of projects am I working on that would benefit from having the American people support or engage? If we're having to spend money in an area that could better be delivered by having others actually demonstrate and support the work we're trying to do, might that free up resources that could help us improve some of the underlying databases or the technologies? Second, I would say this. The reason this directive calls on, in the beginning, this focus on high-value data sets is that you and the agencies are working to support the policy priorities of your cabinet secretary, the president, and the American people. To the extent that you have uncovered potential value that's ready to be unlocked, this directive says make sure that you move that information up so that it is evaluated in the context of the highest priority endeavors. We're fairly confident a set of initiatives that advance a policy priority of your cabinet secretary will absolutely get the time and the attention that it needs. There may not be new incremental money for any particular project, but you will get the time and the attention because this is about priorities and about ensuring that those best ideas are heard. This is exactly the culture that we're seeing. When the Department of Veterans Administration asked Veterans Affairs asked to find ways to streamline the processing of veterans benefits claims adjudication, the president and therefore Secretary Shinseki turned the pen over to 19,000 frontline workers in the VA using some simple technology. Tell us your ideas. 12,000 of the 19,000 frontline workers in the Veterans Benefits Administration had participated in this endeavor. Over 3,500 ideas and votes on ideas and deliberations. And what's happening? Those ideas have now filtered to each of the agency field directors. They've put together business plans and 3 to 5 pages of what they want to execute on. the best dozen or so are coming to Washington to present their ideas directly to the senior leadership at the VA later this month. And we're confident that very quickly in the spring of 2010, we're going to see dramatic results. This is the story for you, the frontline workers in the federal government. You have the chance to really see the potential that you have in front of you realized if you participate in the tools that we're setting out for you.
And so far, what we've seen is open government actually leads to savings and ideas that we may not have thought of before. As I've said, looking at some of the best ideas that we've seen, and as the president has committed to making sure that we deploy the resources of the government to make sure that we're serving the American people better, who better than each of you to help us think through some of those ideas? We've seen that whether it's the SAVE Award, or whether it's through the VA, or whether it's through this directive itself, that the best thinking is reflected when you go through the route of collaboration and participation and transparency.
Great. Well, I actually just realized that our boss is speaking now.
Yes, he is.
So
it's
we
time
need
to go.
Bring this to a close, although we have a lot more questions, and so I'm going to put you both on the spot and ask if you will write a blog post following up. We'll grab some more questions, and you can answer them.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Yep. So guys, look for that either later today or tomorrow. So we'll get to more of your questions. I know that the conversation will continue online. We'll keep our eye on that too. Again, want to thank Anish Chopra and Vivek Kundra for joining us today. If you want to flip right over on whitehouse.gov/live, the president's speaking about the economy. And we'll hope you will take a moment and watch that. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.